Hey, we're broadcasting here! We're broadcasting here!
In the 1960s, a movie with an X rating was pretty much doomed to a death sentence, much less Academy acclaim. But in 1969, Midnight Cowboy, starring Dustin Hoffman and John Voight, went from an obscure production that no one wanted to touch to 7 Oscar nominations and into film lore. Midnight Cowboy was a daring and different kind of film. Based on James Herlihy's novel of the same name, the movie focuses on Joe Buck, who moves from Texas to New York City to seek his fortune as a male prostitute. Buck meets a disabled con man named Ratso Rizzo. The film's director, John Schlesinger, wasn't afraid to push boundaries by exploring such subjects as homosexuality, prostitution, and sexual assault. Author Glenn Frankel has carved out a unique niche for himself with his film biographies. Glenn's latest book is called Shooting Midnight Cowboy: Art, Sex, Loneliness, Liberation, and the Making of a Dark Classic. Glenn says he likes to pick the films he writes about based on how they define their era. Few offer a better chance to do that than the gritty and pioneering Midnight Cowboy.
Midnight Cowboy was filmed in 1968. It came out in 1969. That's an era rich in conflict, anxiety, cultural change, and it just obviously it was going to be rich, complicated terrain. And from then on, I was there.
John Schlesinger directed Midnight Cowboy. Why did he want to make this movie?
Well, John Schlesinger has had some real success in the UK, where he was born and raised, first as a documentary filmmaker, trained on BBC television, and then makes some of these sort of black and white, gritty, interesting kitchen sink movies, as they were called at the time, and has some success. And his biggest success then comes when he moves his camera down to London and does this sort of semi-satirical, critical movie called Darling. It's a great success. It wins for Julie Christie the Academy Award for Best Actress, and what is her first starring role? He's a hot commodity, and so the studios in Hollywood are interested in him, and he's interested in coming to the States. He was looking for a movie, though, looking for a story about New York and a story about outsiders coming to New York as he is coming to New York as an outsider. So he gloms on to Midnight Cowboy. It's not exactly anyone's favorite idea for a first movie in the States. A lot of the studios have read the novel and rejected it. He hooks on with an independent New York producer named Jerry Hellman. Jerry doesn't love the novel either, but he really wants to work with Schlesinger. And he's willing to meet Schlesinger halfway and to do this kind of thing. He knows New York. And so the two of them get together and set out to find a studio. And they end up with United Artists, a very small but unconventional studio from that era. And for a very minimal budget, United Artists is willing to do this film. So John gets to make the film he wants to make, but he's got very little money and he's got to rely on people he hardly knows to get this thing organized and started.
A couple of writers wrote screenplays that Schlesinger and producer Jerry Hellman were not happy with, but then along came this screenwriter named Waldo Salt, who wrote a screenplay that they were happy with. What was it about Waldo's script that made it work?
I think Waldo understood what was at the heart of the novel, this relationship between these true troubled guys. Joe Buck, this lonely outsider from Texas, handsome guy who buys himself a cowboy outfit and gets on the Greyhound and comes to New York thinking he's going to become a male hustler and using the cowboy trope, as you will, as his, you know, sexual invitation.
Oh, hell, I'm a hustler. You didn't know that?
And at the same time, Ratso Rizzo, this sort of disabled con man from the Bronx with a pulmonary condition and, you know, one of life's true losers.
Well, now, you mean you're picking up trade on the street right there? That's nowhere. I mean, you got to get yourself some kind of management.
They both are really two of life's, of God's lonely men, if you will. And Waldo got that. Waldo understood the heart of that. Waldo had also spent a lot of time in New York. He's a screenwriter who had been blacklisted in the early 50s for his membership in the Communist Party. He's a lifelong alcoholic. He's a troubled guy. He and Schlesinger and Jerry Hellman, the producer, spend months. They rent a little cottage out on the beach in Malibu and work on this thing. And there's a lot of conflicts between them. But Waldo is the guy who can give them the heart of what they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Schlesinger originally didn't want either John Voight or Dustin Hoffman for the lead roles. Why not?
Yeah, it's ironic, isn't it? Because they're so wonderful in the movie, and he comes to understand that. But he didn't, you know, Dustin Hoffman is the first one who's offered up to him to play Ratso Rizzo. And Schlesinger has never seen Hoffman in his 10 years of working in, you know, in New York of, you know, off Broadway, on small TV shows, that sort of thing. He thinks of Hoffman as Benjamin Braddock, this sort of clean cut, white bread young guy that he sees in The Graduate. He doesn't think he can play Ratso Rizzo. Also, Hoffman, The Graduate makes Hoffman a sort of overnight, not only an overnight movie star, but an overnight sort of counterculture icon, because The Graduate's such a successful sort of generation gap movie. It comes out in 67. And Schlesinger doesn't want a big movie star messing with his little movie. Hoffman convinces him, though, by basically dressing in a dirty raincoat, learning how to do the limp, meeting Schlesinger at midnight in an automat in Times Square, and then dragging him around Times Square for several hours and wearing down his resistance. And Schlesinger comes to realize that this guy isn't just a movie star. He's a character actor. He's a true actor. He didn't want Voight either. Voight had never been in a major movie. Voight, he didn't like Voight's sort of Dutch boy looks. In the novel, Joe Buck is a dark-haired, tall, handsome guy. Schlesinger was thinking of Michael Sarrazin, a French-Canadian actor who he'd met on the beach at Malibu while he was working on the script. And in fact, they do auditions on these guys, and they decide to sign Michael Sarrazin. But Sarrazin is already signed to another film company, which wants big money for them to use him. And remember, there's a very limited budget. They've given Dustin Hoffman a fair amount of money to come in it, and they simply don't have the money to pay Sarrazin. And meanwhile, a woman named Marion Doherty, who's the casting director in New York, who's helping these guys cast the movie, she believes Voight has the right sense of vulnerability and a little bit of violence in his soul, that he can play that, that he can play Joe Buck with all his weaknesses and his strengths, and she pushes hard for him. Later on, John Schlesinger admits in many interviews that he's so lucky to get these two guys. They're both New York trained actors. They work together beautifully, and that he wasn't responsible for casting John Voight. It was Marion Doherty.
One of the most famous scenes in Midnight Cowboy was filmed at the corner of 6th Avenue and West 58th Street in New York City. Can you tell us about that scene?
Yeah, it's early on in the movie. Joe Buck's in town. He's had his first sort of unsuccessful tryst. He's basically a very vulnerable figure, and he meets this guy in a bar, Ratso Rizzo, who says, well, you know, I can help you become a successful male hustler. I can introduce you to friends who can get you started. And they're walking down the street talking, and Ratso's doing his line of, you know, his con man routine with Joe Buck, who looks like a good target. And they're crossing the crosswalk when suddenly a taxi cab comes into it, you know, trying to beat the light. Well, they're in the middle of the crosswalk, and Ratso slams his hand on the taxi cab, says,
"Hey, I'm walking here. I'm walking here."
It's a classic New York moment where he asserts himself. And Dustin Hoffman always told the story that this taxi cab was and driver in this, you know, breaking into, trying to beat the light was not in the script. It was an improvised moment. It was a real cab with a real driver. And he made up those lines in reaction. He was going to say, we're making a movie here, but he catches himself and he stays in character. It's a famous line. It's probably the most famous line in the movie because it so epitomizes this New York attitude of pride and anger. Well, the problem is that 6 months before, in a draft script from December 1967, the taxi cab is coming through the crosswalk and Ratso is slamming his hand on the hood of the car. So there's a crew member driving the cab. The timing is perfectly timed for the cab to come into the crosswalk. What is improvised, though, or what isn't in the script, is the famous line, "I'm walking here, I'm walking here." In the script, Ratso slams his hand down and flicks off the taxi driver, and that's it. So I think you can give Dustin Hoffman 3/4 of the credit, because it's the line that really is so famous and so enduring, and Dustin certainly improvised that, or at least made it up, you know, and it's not in the script. Schlesinger loved it. It becomes one of those iconic moments in the movie.
Most definitely. How did the song Everybody's Talkin', performed by Harry Nilsson, end up on the soundtrack?
Among other things, Schlesinger brought in people, as I say, from outside, including a handsome young man who he met in L.A. called Michael Childers. Michael was 24 years old. He was a UCLA film student. Schlesinger sort of appointed Michael, a handsome young guy, to be his envoy, if you will, to the sort of lively arts world in New York, including the Andy Warhol crowd. He also assigns Michael to, you know, look at record albums and see what's out there that might be an interesting song. Again, this is after The Graduate, where Mike Nichols has used Simon and Garfunkel songs in a different way than we've ever seen in movies before. He's doing the songs repeatedly, using songs that aren't necessarily connected to the movie, but that resonate somehow. And so Michael comes across this rather obscure Harry Nilsson album called Aerial Ballet and a song called Everybody's Talkin'. It was written by a Greenwich Village folk singer named Fred Neil, but Harry turns it into a very lively pop song. It hasn't hit very big, but Schlesinger really likes the lyric and the sort of lively rhythm of the song and the lyric that goes,
everybody's talking at me, I don't hear a word they're saying, only the echoes of my mind.
It sort of sums up in his mind Joe Buck's vulnerability and the sort of enigmatic feel of Everybody's Talking and the vulnerability that's in the song and the sense of solitude. He thinks it really gets you in the head of Joe Buck. He sticks with it and it really, and he uses it three or four times in the course of the movie. And I think it really is the thing that ties the movie together. It's so memorable. It's one of the three or four things that really stand out about the movie.
Mm-hmm. Definitely ties the movie together, much like the rug in The Big Lebowski really ties the room together.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Can you talk about why Midnight Cowboy received an X rating and what problems that caused prior to the release of the film?
Hollywood had just moved from the old, what was called the production code system of censorship, to a rating system, which was actually designed to allow movie makers more leeway in making more adult, using more adult themes, making more complex movies. They were aiming for the younger sort of baby boomer audience. And Midnight Cowboy is one of the first movies rated, and it comes out with an X rating. And the myth is that this was the sort of prudish ratings board, you know, being scared by the sort of, well, rather tame sex scenes in Midnight Cowboy and by the gay sex scenes in Midnight Cowboy. Cowboy. The truth is something rather different, I found out. I interviewed someone who was on the ratings board at the time. The movie depicts both gay and straight sex, and the sex scenes, though there's no nudity, there's no romantic sex. These are transactional moments between a male hustler and his potential clients. And it made people uncomfortable at a time when homophobia, even in New York City, was sort of the standard operating procedure. And gay people were never, you know, depicted in movies except being very troubled and often, you know, committing suicide, you know, at some point in the movie. John Schlesinger was doing something, who was gay himself, was doing something much more complex. And so the head of United Artists, a guy named Arthur Krim, who was an important figure in New York, both in politics and in fundraising. Arthur was uncomfortable with this, and he took it to a New York psychiatrist, an eminent psychiatrist, who confirmed that these gay sex scenes were something that young people shouldn't see, that young men, you know, might be influenced somehow to become gay themselves. They thought of homosexuality in that era, or at least the psychiatric priesthood that was so influential in New York, thought of homosexuality as sort of rather like COVID-19, a disease, an infectious disease. And so under the advice of this eminent psychiatrist, Arthur himself rated the movie X. He didn't tell anybody he did that. The movie was rated X, but in a sense, the X rating was a little bit of a come on to people like me. I mean, I'm an 18-year-old college student in New York at that time. The fact that the movie was rated X, the fact that it starred Dustin Hoffman, who I knew was suddenly a big, important, iconic figure due to The Graduate, those were the things that attracted me to see the movie. So it doesn't hurt the movie at first, but when the movie gets nominated for 7 Academy Awards, which surprised everyone, and gets wonderful reviews, and even starts doing well at the box office, which no one had expected, United Artists has a change of heart. And after it wins Best Picture, the only X-rated movie ever to be nominated and ever to win the Best Picture Oscar, United Artists comes back to the ratings board and asks to get an R. And the ratings board doesn't even think twice about it. They give the movie an R. It's rated down. But the legend is that this was something that maybe the ratings board asked them to take out a scene or a few seconds. It's not true. It's the same movie we saw that was X-rated is now an R, and that's the way it's come down to us today.
How has Midnight Cowboy influenced the movies that came after it?
Well, it is the opening movie of a sort of a decade of grittier New York movies. Movies like Dog Day Afternoon and Taxi Driver. It's very influential on those kinds of films. And the ultimate, Taxi Driver is really the ultimate dark New York film. And so the Midnight Cowboy is the first, and its success opens the door not only to these kinds of movie makers like Martin Scorsese, but also to movie stars who are following in Dustin Hoffman's footsteps. You begin to get Robert De Niro and Al Pacino and Richard Dreyfuss, you know, guys who never would have been movie stars in the 50s and 60s. They do not look like Cary Grant or Tab Hunter. It opens the door for them as well. So in that narrow sense, but I think in a bigger sense, the barrier breaking about sexuality, about what a movie can be about, is where Midnight Cowboy really breaks the ground. It is the first of its kind. And movies that follow in that line, like The Last Picture Show and some other films, follow in its footsteps. It's funny, John isn't in the pantheon of great sort of new Hollywood directors like Scorsese, Robert Altman, Peter Bogdanovich. There are a lot of reasons for that, I think. Part of the reason, frankly, is I think because John was an exuberant gay man. And that didn't fit the mold that Hollywood was looking for in that sense. But nonetheless, I think his best films, and Midnight Cowboy, in my opinion, is his very best film, hold up with anything else that comes out of that sort of lively, fertile area.
Glenn Frankel, thank you very much for joining us. It was great talking to you, and congratulations on shooting Midnight Cowboy. It's a wonderful book.
Well, Doug, thanks for having me on.
Glenn Frankel is the author of Shooting Midnight Cowboy: Art, Sex, Loneliness, Liberation, and the Making of a Dark Classic. Find out more at WPR.org/beta.
They tend to reinforce racism, racial preferences in dating, which I think is just another form of racism. It's just like a nice way of saying racism.
Author Nancy Jo Sales joins us to talk about dating apps. That's coming up in just a moment. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio.